Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back at it here on the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you on a Rumble Tuesday as we're watching some 2017 Royal Rumble. They just had Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns going at it with Chris Jericho in this cage above the ring. It's lots of crazy stuff. Kevin Owens was the Universal Champion in this match. So 404-741-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Feel free to leave us a comment there about anything we've been discussing with you here. As always, we ask you to download the radio.com app. That way you can always catch us on the go. You're not listening to the radio station we know as much because you are not in your car. Makes sense, right? So you do want to listen to it. We know that, but put it on your device. Get the radio.com app. You got a phone, right? Smartphone. You got smart speakers. You got a tablet. You got a boombox. You got a Laserdisc player. You got an Xbox. You got a Coleco. You got Intellivision. Just download it on something. That way you can always catch us on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. As always, follow us on our personal Twitter handles. That's the best way to reach out to us. It's at JMCH316, at JMCH316, your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He's in Midtown producing the show. As always, Jarvis in the building. He'll be asking the questions later on for Rank'em tonight at JarvisD90. So this is a fascinating story to me in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's certainly rooted in some controversy. So Georgia Senator Kelly Loeffler, who's had plenty of her own issues and things going on, is co-owner of the Atlanta Dream. And she wrote a letter to WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert to express her opposition to things such as the Black Lives Matter movement that the WNBA is going to embrace. Okay? She said, "I adamantly oppose the Black Lives Matter political movement, which has advocated for the defunding of police, called for the removal of Jesus from churches, and the disruption of the nuclear family structure, harbored anti-Semitic views, and promoted violence and destruction across the country. I believe it's totally misaligned with the values and goals of the WNBA and the Atlanta Dream, where we support tolerance and inclusion. She also told Engelbert, the commissioner, that she was, quote, incredibly disappointed to read about efforts to insert a political platform into the league, adding, quote, the truth is we need less, not more politics in sports. In a time when polarizing politics is as divisive as ever, sports has the power to be a unifying antidote. And now more than ever, we should be united in our goal to remove politics from sports." Now, she's advocating for putting an American flag on jerseys as a common sense solution. Now, obviously, this has stirred the hornet's nest big time. Okay, there is a bigger overriding question to all of this. Okay, so the bigger overriding question is, because people don't like to hear this, is she entitled to her opinion? Right, wrong, or indifferent, whether you agree with her or don't agree with her, is she entitled to have her opinion? Now, I do have to laugh on lots of different things. Okay, one is people immediately went to the Donald Sterling. Oh, well, she should be removed from the WNBA. Because there's a movement now, you know, you're hearing some players, you're hearing, you know, Twitterverse, of course. Oh, she's got to be removed as an owner. So a few things, okay? One is, did any of y'all know that she was an owner, that she's co-owner, by the way, of the Atlanta Dream? Did anybody even know that before today? Or yesterday, whatever this story came out? If you say yes, you're lying. Because, first of all, she's not been involved in day-to-day activities since she became a U.S. senator. She's co-owner. Jarvis, do you know how long she's been an owner of the Atlanta Dream? Do you know off the top of your head how long? Without looking up, I'm just asking you off the top of your head, because I know. Do you know when she took over ownership? 2011. The franchise has only been around since 2008. She took over ownership in 2011 with, I think her name is Kathy Brock, I think is her partner that's in this. She's had the team since 2011. Did any of you know that? The answer is no, you didn't know that, okay? Because there's been no stories, there's been no angst, there's been no big controversies and things like that. Now, did she say some dopey things? Of course. You know why? Because she's a politician pandering to an electorate because she's up for re-election. So there are some dopey things. But she's not Donald Sterling either, okay? That's not fair. Donald Sterling has a decorated history. Even the federal government sued Donald Sterling for his, you know, landlord practices and the types of tenants he would hire. Famously, where he said stuff like he'd rather just rent to Korean people because they just pay the rent and don't say nothing, and that black people bring filth and vermin in. So he has a long history of saying direct things. And by the way, if you think Donald Sterling's a racist just toward black people, then you're living under a rock, because he doesn't like anybody. He doesn't like anybody of any kind of color or persuasion outside of him. So, again, it's an easy thing in today's society that we always throw the word racist around, okay? But she did not say anything about, I don't like black people, I don't want them on my team, this, that, and the other. She spoke specifically about the movement. Now, again, I will say, you can agree with her, disagree with her. I don't really care. I could truthfully care less what your opinion is of her opinion about the things. The question is, does she have a right to have that opinion? Because people want her thrown out of the league. And my question is, why? Because she doesn't agree with you? Because she doesn't have the same exact value? Again, did she say some dopey things? Yeah, I don't think we need to worry about an American flag on uniforms and some of these things. But I promise you that she's not the only person that doesn't agree with the Black Lives Matter movement and some of the things that they represent. So it is interesting that you've got some players and things. Now, the commissioner said in a statement that, you know, she's obviously knows about the comments and things. She also said that Loeffler has not been involved in day-to-day activity. Now, my question is, has there been any kind of history of the Atlanta Dream where players have felt, I don't know, persecuted or treated unfairly or things like that? I don't remember hearing those stories. Wouldn't you think if those things had happened, we would have heard about them by now? Like I said, she's had the team for almost 10 years now. She took over before the 2011 season. They only played, I think, 3 years under the original owner before, I take that back. The original owner was only there for 1 year. Then there was an LLC that took over the ownership for like less than 2 years. And then Loeffler and her partner took it over from there. And I'll be honest with you, I had no clue that she was co-owner in this. None. No clue. It never even dawned on me that she was co-owner. Now, you know, personally, I think Kelly Loeffler is a crook because of the fact that she profited, you know, and was able to get insider information about the pandemic and things like that before anybody and use that to her advantage. Hell, her husband, what? He's the guy that's the chairman of the NASDAQ, right? Or he runs the New York Stock Exchange or whatever it is it's something like that. Like he runs the New York Stock Exchange. So I think she's a crook because I think she used insider information to profit and benefit in the wake of a pandemic. If you're going to tell me that she shouldn't own the Atlanta Dream because she should be investigated and indicted for, you know, criminal activities like that, okay. But because she doesn't like or doesn't agree with an opinion, that's exactly why she should be. She didn't say anything disparaging about any particular player or a race of people as a whole. You know, if she had said that about the KKK, she'd be celebrated. They'd be celebrating her for saying it. But because she doesn't have the same political slant or bend, because I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember hearing people that were upset with her as an owner of the Atlanta Dream. There hasn't been this movement. And I can tell you, I did not know that she was an owner. And it never dawned on me that if she was the owner, that she hasn't been involved in any day-to-day activities. Is she pandering? Of course. She's a politician. She's up for re-election. Of course she's pandering to a crowd. Everybody knows and understands that. But is that enough? Does that warrant the idea that she should not be allowed to own the team? You know, has she not paid players? Has she paid players at a disproportionate wage? Because that's why I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to compare her to Donald Sterling. Look at the track record of Donald Sterling. Long before, you know, his girlfriend put that video out of him saying that you shouldn't even bring black people to games and stuff like that. Go look at the federal lawsuit against him. Go look at the charges Elgin Baylor had brought against him. You don't have to look very hard to see a long and storied track record of Donald Sterling and the actual issues that he had. It's a different situation out there. But it does speak to the idea of, are you allowed to have a different opinion? And because it's not a popular opinion, you know, can you have that and own a team? You know, if the players don't want to play for her, like they didn't want to play for Donald Sterling, then leave. Then, you know, don't play. State, you know, protest. They have that right too. They have the right to protest, not play for the organization. They have that right. That's their choice. If they don't think that she should be the owner, don't play. Leave the Atlanta Dream. Go overseas and play. There are other leagues. In fact, that's been one of the problems that women have had throughout the WNBA is that they don't feel like they're fairly compensated. They don't feel like that they can earn enough money, which is why a lot of top players have ended up in China and places like that, which is really funny, by the way, too, how many WNBA players have ended up in China, of all places. You know, that bastion of inclusiveness and, you know, human rights and everything, right? The people that put in place a, you know, you would be castrated if you, you know, had too many kids. You know, those good people over there. But these women can earn a living over there. And that's been one of their problems with the WNBA is the split on the collective bargaining. Did you not? That's been a story, you know, the last time it came up that the women did not feel like they were getting enough of a percentage. And the response from the owners, not just Kelly Loeffler, but the entire league, was the fact that we don't make enough money, that we have a ton of money tied up in expenses with no real margin to operate with. So like I said, I don't necessarily care if you agree with Kelly Loeffler and her opinion. That's not really the issue, okay? Because everybody has differing opinions, and everybody's got their dopey thoughts and things like that. But at the same time, does she not have a right to express how she feels about things? If she comes out and says things like, you know, I don't like our black players or this, that, and the other, and makes direct commentary to her team, then yeah, then that's a different conversation. But saying I don't like the Black Lives Matter movement and I don't think we should politicize, why does that mean that she has to give up ownership of the team? Because you don't like it? You know, Neil Bortz has a famous saying. He says, one of the great things about America is you have no right to not be offended. And it's true. It's true. No matter what anybody says, you know, you put any person in a room with 100 other people, you're not going to have 100 friends and 100 like-minded opinion. You're not. That's human nature. And some things are more extreme than the others. Some things go one direction or another. And you agree with certain things and don't agree with certain things. That's for you as an adult to figure out and decide. But is she supposed to be punished because she has a differing opinion? That's where the story starts to get interesting about should they force her out as an owner because she doesn't agree with the movement. All right, Dukes and Bell earlier today had Darren Eales on as we get ready for Atlanta United coming up this weekend. We'll replay that coming up next for you. It is the John Chuckwa Show. Hanging out on this Rumble Tuesday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and on the Radio.com app. Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you here on the John Chuckwa Show. Hanging out, it's a Rumble Tuesday. They got the 2017 Royal Rumble playing on FS1 tonight as their throwback show. They don't have that talk show. They got rid of that, the one with Renee Young, who, by the way, tested positive for COVID-19 herself. But they got rid of that. I forget what that show was called, but it was like their weekly kind of recap show or whatever like that, and they got rid of that. So now they're just showing the throwbacks, and this is the 2017 Royal Rumble that they're right now, and we're still in the middle of the Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns match. This is for the Universal title, I believe. And Chris Jericho's up in a... Funny to see Chris Jericho all cleaned up and, you know, now that he's in AEW and stuff like that, I guess we forget that it wasn't very long ago that he was in WWE and then, what, I think went to Japan for a little bit and then now is in one of the stalwarts in AEW, which, you know, they'll be on tomorrow night for a little bit of Dynamite action. Speaking of Dynamite, we finally get to talk some Atlanta United and get to root for Atlanta United because they will be in action coming up this Saturday. And, of course, we'll have all your action right here on Sports Radio Nighttime The Game with Jason Longshore and Mike Conney. We'll have all of the action for you. But earlier today on the Dukes and Bell Show from 2 to 7 right here on these airwaves, and Willie P is in this week filling in for Carl Dukes, who's taking his vacation. Everybody kind of getting their summer breaks in before school starts back up. But the guys had Darren Eels on for his weekly chat with the guys, and they started off by asking Darren about what life has been like so far in that bubble.
Yeah, it's pretty eerie, to be honest. So, you know, you think about it, two pretty big Disney hotels, the Swan and the Dolphin, and we're the only people on site, Major League Soccer, so it's quite eerie when, you know, you can be walking down corridors and not see anybody. There's the huge check-in lobbies, which are obviously out of action at the moment because we're all sort of contained in inside the perimeters of both hotels. And then, you know, to be honest, they've done a good job in putting on bits and pieces, you know, so there's outdoor soccer pool, they've got ping pong tables, so they're just trying to do the best to sort of keep the boredom away. But I've been impressed with what they've done from you know, facilities, and obviously it's very safe. It's pretty rare, you know, a little bit more now because we've got all the teams on site, but, you know, when you see another team, you're sort of crossing over to the other side of a huge corridor and sort of waving from a distance. So everyone's keeping to the protocol, and, you know, we'll get onto it in terms of FC Dallas, but I think within the bubble it seems to be working and doing its job in not and there not being any transmissions between teams.
And best as you can possibly determine, Darren, just because I know that you're down there and we obviously don't have the benefit of seeing it up close and personal, but, you know, what is the interaction, you know, between players, you know, when team activities aren't going on? Like, is there intermingling? Are you seeing other teams, or how far away is that?
No, so we've all got our own floors. So, and within our own floors, we've all got sort of a team lounge. There's sort of three rooms that they've made up into. One's got a ping pong table, one's sort of got poker set up, one's for video games. So at all times outside your room, everyone's wearing masks. So you can't walk for 6 feet without there being a, you know, sanitizer dispenser. So they've done a good job, and the teams are doing a good job from everything I've seen of keeping to that. And really the interactions, so like I said, if you're sort of walking to go to training or to go to testing, you might sort of see some players from a team in the corridor, but everyone, you know, keeps their side of the corridor. So, you know, I think they've done a good job, and it's just clearly that, you know, the issues with a couple of teams that actually brought the virus into the bubble that's caused some issues.
And that's the thing, Darren. We talked about this earlier in the show where we've seen in, you know, in Germany, granted, they're in a different phase of the coronavirus from where we're getting all these hot spots here in parts of America. But it just seems like we've seen it work in other leagues. Is this just a dynamic of just how the coronavirus has sort of ramped up again here in the States? What are the medical experts telling you?
Yeah, I mean, look, so at the moment, FC Dallas have obviously been withdrawn from the tournament. And, you know, their case came from people that got exposed to it before they came to Orlando. And then when they got to Orlando, it obviously, you know, with the testing, it got revealed that, you know, a number of the players, I think in the end it was 10 players, had it across the team. So, you know, that was an example of the bubble doing its job, really, in terms of isolating with the testing. Unfortunately, there hasn't been, or it doesn't appear to have been, any transmission to other teams. But of course, Mike, the problem you've got is out there in the world at the moment, there, particularly here in America, there are high rates just in the natural population. So, you know, to be honest, I mean, I know, you know, like I said, credit to the players, they're doing a great job, and the coaches, and they're dealing with it. And, you know, we're fortunate we've had two full training sessions now with everybody training who's come on the trip. Obviously, Joseph's still back rehabbing in Atlanta. But, you know, they've been, you know, successful, been working through that with them just hanging out in the hotel room, waiting for the next training session. We're all doing our bit, but again, you know, if this was back in local markets, I think you'd have even more difficulty because here, you know, it is very, very rare. I mean, I've been here now 3 days, and I can't even think of an interaction with another employee except for at our food service, which is, you know, as you can imagine, done very carefully behind screens, gloved, and you hand your plate, they put it on, and you get it back. So there is really no sort of interaction with the outside world, whereas you wouldn't be getting that in local markets.
Darren Eales, Atlanta United president, joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline on Dukes and Bell. Willie P. in for Carl Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Just as a point of clarification, Darren, because I know that we had the couple of positive tests, and I know that Frank DeBoer had said one of the players had gone back to training. What is our status right now in terms of the COVID test? I know you can't reveal names, but what is our status right now in terms of our guys' full health as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, so, well, we've got everyone back. So since we had our first training session here Sunday evening, so we've had a Sunday and a Monday evening training session, and we've got everybody back training. So, you know, that's great news. And, again, yesterday we did a bit of an 11v11 scrimmage, and it was good to see, you know, all the lads were getting stuck in, and it was a good feisty game, which you always like to see as you're building up to play a tough team in New York Red Bulls.
It is Darren Eales, guys, president of Atlanta United. I know we're all starved for sports. Can't wait. I was just watching Chelsea and Crystal Palace today. I'm jonesing so bad for the Five Stripes. So I know I was on vacay last week. Just want to pick your brain. Tell me about Jürgen Damm and why you pulled the trigger on that guy.
Yeah, no, so excited to get Jürgen into the club. So he's someone that, you know, with his experience, and he's been winning a lot of championships with Tigres, I think, you know, he'd be the first to say it's a chance for him to sort of have a new start with a new team, and we're excited. You know, he's a Mexican international. He's super quick, Mike. So, I mean, when they did the test, I think it was about a couple of years ago, it was Gareth Bale, then him. So, you know, I like to collect fast players. So I had Gareth with me at Spurs, and now we've got Jürgen. But joking aside, he's really, you know, he's something that we need, because, you know, that ball over the top that you can put, that outlet pass in transition with someone with his pace is something that I think will add another dimension to us. And we've always spoken about that right from the start with Atlanta United wanting to have a fast team that's fast and fluid, and he certainly fits the bill there. So, you know, someone who's got the experience he has in winning championships, the Mexican international, and, you know, for us to be able to get him on a free transfer was something that, you know, we were delighted to be able to get that deal done.
And real quick, I was going to ask him, Will, when do we get to see this guy? Because I know, obviously, there's we won't see him in Orlando.
No, but he'll be available as soon as we come back. So, you know, cool. The plan is to return to the local markets and play once the tournament's finished. So, you know, we'll be working in the background to make, you know, try and fast-track the process we need to get the visa to get him in, so that you know, he'll be with us ready to start training when we're back from Orlando. And, again, I think the other good thing for him, just quickly on Jürgen as well, he's got perfect English as well as Spanish. So, again, for us with our team, you know, people that are bilingual like that really help as well, I think, in terms of knitting the team together. So, and I don't know if you saw, but he's got some great moves on his TikTok as well. So I think he'll be a breath of fresh air for our social media team.
Yeah, he's definitely a social media superstar, and we're pleased again to be joined by Darren Eales, president of Atlanta United. You guys also made a homegrown signing, somebody who is available for selection in the Orlando tournament. Tell us a little bit more about this kid, Tyler Wolf, forward out of our academy.
Yeah, no, excited to have Tyler as a homegrown. So obviously, you know, his dad is the ex-national team player. He's coach of Austin. He's, you know, they're from Atlanta. And I think it says a lot because, you know, it's really, I think, credit to our academy that, you know, Josh is his father's in Austin, but that he, you know, has allowed his son to sign with with Atlanta. I think that shows that he has a great sort of confidence that we're going to do the best for Tyler, and it's a great environment for him to be in, and hopefully he's someone that can, you know, get some 13 minutes in the future. I mean, this tournament, Will, is brilliant because, you know, we need everybody, and so he's thrown them the deep end a little bit in terms of training every day with the squad, and he's done really well. And actually Fernando Mesa was talking in the media a couple of days ago, and I think, you know, he was saying that he liked Tyler as a player, and he was actually surprised how young he is. He's only 17. I think, you know, Fernando thought he was a little bit older than that. So he's a great talent, like all youngsters, though. The hard work starts now, and, you know, it's not good enough just to have talent. It's about your work rate. It's about, you know, putting in the hard sort of hard training that you need to be able to be ready when that opportunity comes. And, you know, we feel like Tyler, and he comes, you know, with his dad as someone that was a great player, and knows what it takes. We feel like he's got the mentality, but he's still got to go out there and prove it.
It's Darren Eales, guys. If you're just joining us, the president of Atlanta United, as Will and I here in town, he's down in the bubble and talking about how, if you missed it, the circumstances about FC Dallas, actually the virus came in from outside the bubble. I guess somebody didn't follow protocols. Darren, what's the attitude? How are the guys' heads? Because we've talked to a lot of players. Guys are, you know, they're cautiously optimistic. I mean, where's everybody's head at? Because obviously that Dallas and then the Nashville situation is kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in a, just speaking for for our squad, I think they're in a reasonably good place. I mean, obviously, this isn't easy for anyone, and there's always going to be some concerns, and I have total sympathy in that regard. I think, though, that the fact now that we've had two full training sessions under our belt, the players are here, and they've realised that this is a this is really as safe as you could practically be, is what we've got here. So I think there's that element of reassurance as we now sort of go through the day-to-day that this is something that, actually is safer, and certainly safer than being back in your local markets. So I think that helps. And like anything, we're just now looking forward to starting to play games. I mean, tomorrow night will be great. We'll be able to watch the Miami-Orlando kickoff game, and it'll just feel like it's real then that matches are taking place. And, we've got a huge game on Saturday. It's Red Bulls, who, we know we've got a history from. We've yet to beat them in the regular season. We know they're going to be tough. I mean, what about the first game to play in the Orlando Heat is against a team that is just going to come out and press right from the start and try to throttle you before you've even begun. So it's going to be a tough one. I think we've got to be sharp right from the kickoff because, we know what's coming for us, and it's tough to play off when it is your first game for what will be sort of 4.5 months because we haven't had a chance to play any friendly matches before this tournament.
Darren Eales, Atlanta United president. Be safe in the bubble, and we look forward to seeing you guys play on Saturday.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up next, it will be time for What's Bugging Chuckery. We will get to all of that. It's the John Chuckery Show with you here live. Sports Radio 99 The Game and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 99 The Game. Back with you here on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out on a Rumble Tuesday. 404-741-0929. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to leave us a comment. Don't forget the radio.com app. Download that because that way you can always catch us when you're on the go and you're not in your vehicle. You can still listen to the radio station that way. Of course, social media is at 929 The Game, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Follow us on all the different platforms there as always. And give us a follow on Twitter, our personal Twitter. It's at JMCH316. He's at JarvisD90. Watching a little bit of this 2017 Royal Rumble there. Now we're getting into some John Cena and some AJ Styles. Those guys had some pretty damn good matches with one another. AJ was just kind of coming into WWE at this time, so he was relatively new at this time in the WWE. I wish that I don't know what they got going on next week, but man, I wish they'd go back like this. Some of these men, you guys, they got to put on some of these like the 1990 Royal Rumble, or give me the 89 what would that have been, 89 SummerSlam. That's right, Hogan and Beefcake versus Zeus and Randy Savage, right? That with Sherry Martel, it was King Macho. I mean, give me some of those classic, like mid-late 80s WWE, E pay-per-views. Or, they did WrestleMania 3. Give me some of the older stuff, man. So people like you, so younger people can go back and just, go back and watch Randy Savage and tell me he's not one of the greatest performers in the history of wrestling. Tell me he's not one of the great all-time just characters, performers, his promos. I mean, just everything that he did. I said before, Randy's on my Mount Rushmore. You talk about my four favorite wrestlers of all time. Rock, Austin, Hogan, and Macho Man. I mean, I love Randy Savage. I mean, his transformation and I'll give Chris Jericho credit for this. I mean, he's really been a guy who's been able to change his character over all of these years. You have to give him a lot of credit for what he's done to basically kind of reinvent himself, because he's been around. I mean, I don't think people realize how long Chris Jericho's been around in the wrestling game. I mean, think about how long, he was wrestling for WCW in what, the mid-90s? Right? I mean, he was wrestling for them 97, 96, 97, somewhere around in that range, I think, is when he first started with WCW. So think about how long it's been that he's been a part of the professional wrestling ranks between WCW, between WWE, you know, because he debuted in WWE, I want to say it was in, I believe it was in 99, right? 99, right? Yeah, because it was right before the Y2J and all that kind of stuff, because that's how he came in with the whole Y2J thing to it. But he's really had to reinvent himself in lots of different characters. And when you see him now, you know, it's pretty funny to see him, you know, just you think about all the different things that he's done in his career to stay relevant. So I give him a lot of credit for all of that. So, but I wish they'd go back in time a little bit more, since they have the whole network available to them, and show some of these really older things, you know, let people see what the Ultimate Warrior was like. Let people see Hogan, and let people see Randy Savage, you know? I mean, we've seen Roman Reigns and all those guys, you know? I mean, we know those guys. And with all due respect, John Cena. And I'll be the first guy to tell you, I've never been the biggest John Cena guy. I never really understood the gimmick. I mean, I get it. He was immensely popular. You talk about, there's only been four or five guys that legitimately transformed. Like they got bigger than the WWE. Cena's one of those guys. I mean, Rock, Austin, Hogan, those guys were all bigger than the WWF. John Cena was like that too. He was also bigger than the WWE, and he's gone on to do his movies and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's, I guess, basically retired from full-time performing, you know, at this point. But it is pretty amazing, you know. But like I said, they should go back in time and let everybody see, you know, what old school wrestling was like, you know. Because honestly, without having to get the WWE app, which, by the way, there's a free version of it now. So if you do want a free version of the WWE Network, there is a free version that has different content and things like that on it. So, but I love the WWE. The app or WWE Network or whatever it is you want to talk about it. It's an amazing thing. If you're an old school wrestling fan, man, you can see everything that you could have ever imagined and stuff that, you know, you probably don't even remember. Seeing when you were a kid. So lots of good stuff there. All right. Speaking of lots of good stuff, let's get to something called What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Buggin' Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, listen, I hate to say, you know, because I said the other night that I actually found myself agreeing with Terrence Moore. Yes, I know. I mean, it's hard to believe. And listen, If you know who Terrence Moore is, he was a long time columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He was there for a bunch of years, and you know, he was always a controversial figure. He votes for the Baseball Hall of Fame, so he's a Baseball Hall of Fame voter. You know, and he's had lots of interesting opinions over the years. It is also, you know, he was in sports talk radio too. I'm not sure if people remember or understand that he was on sports talk radio for a while, hosting. Yes, I know that sounds crazy to think about, but yes, he was there as part of all of that. Yeah, he was on. Yeah, did you know that, Jarvis? That he did sports talk radio on the old 680 WCNN when they were in the CNN Center and all that, and they used to broadcast from the atrium there and. They had the glass windows. You could watch them broadcast and all that stuff. See, I mean, listen, I am the poet laureate of sports talk radio in this town. I remember all the crazy stuff. I remember, you know, the Jeff Van Note, Larry Munson show and all the crazy things that we used to get in sports talk radio. But he did host. I mean, he was on air doing sports talk radio for a while. And now he does some stuff for Sports Illustrated and things like that. So he's been given his Falcon hot takes and all that kind of stuff. And, in some ways, he's the original hot take. He talked about how the Falcons – remember we talked about how Calvin Johnson said that he wanted to be an Atlanta Falcon and he was picked number two overall in the draft by the Detroit Lions? All right, well, you know – Terrence, of course, had you know, his opinion on all of this stuff. And it just did make me shake my head because we were he basically talks about Julio Jones. Give me just a second, Jarvis. I'm trying to get this thing open. For some reason, it's delaying me here. But he talked about the idea that the Falcons blew it by trading to go get Julio Jones, and they should have done it for Calvin Johnson. Here's Terrence Moore talking about that. That's the guy that they should have gone after.
December 2006, I wrote a column. All right, I wrote a column that said Falcons get Calvin Johnson. All right, this was 5 months before the draft, April draft of 2007, when the Falcons had the 8th pick and they picked some guy named Jamal Anderson, not the running back, the defensive end. You probably never heard of him because he was a bust.
All right, so a few things. They actually, I believe, and Jarvis, maybe you can check this out. I think they moved up to number 8 to even take Jamal Anderson in that draft. They had a bunch of draft picks that year, and I think moved up to number 8 to get that draft pick where they did. But here's the other thing. If they would have had to have gone up to number 2, they probably would have had to have given up the next year's first-round draft pick. Which, anybody remember who they took at number 3 overall in 2008? That would be Matt Ryan. So, if you'd have traded up in 07 to get Calvin Johnson, who was going to play quarterback in 08? Because you most likely wouldn't have had the number 3 overall pick to go get Matt Ryan. You wouldn't have had a guy to actually throw the football to him. You might have had to live with more Byron Leftwich and Joey Harrington, because that was your quarterbacks for 07. When Mike went to jail, that's who this team was stuck with. How many good options would you have had at that point? Now, here's Terrence Moore as well, talking about why the Falcons should have chose Calvin over Julio.
Here's the other reason why you go with Calvin Johnson in 2007 and forget about getting Julio Jones in 2011. And this is what I've said many times before. The Falcons made one of the worst deals in the history of the National Football League in 2011 when they traded those 5 draft picks to the Cleveland Browns for one guy.
Okay. Well, that guy turned out to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Julio Jones, though. And the Falcons were trying to get much better offensively as Roddy was getting older. They wanted more weapons for Matt. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to have been here back in those days to know that they needed a dynamic playmaker to go on their offense. And let me tell you, does that deal really look bad in hindsight? I don't know where that deal looks bad in hindsight. You went and got a first ballot Hall of Famer. And Terrence also said in this comment about how, oh, you'd have Calvin Johnson still playing. What makes you think that? How can you guarantee you'd still have Calvin Johnson playing? Well, he didn't want to play in Detroit. No, he was also tired of getting hurt. Again, hey, Terrence, I interviewed Calvin Johnson about 2 months before he retired from the NFL. And there was talk then that about he was ready to get out of the league. It wasn't just about he didn't like the Lions. He was ready to move on from football. That's what a lot of people have talked about Cam Newton. Said he was ready to move on from football. By the way, we've seen Patrick Willis and other guys that have started retiring early. He just happened to be the first big name. So what makes you think at 35 years old you'd still have Calvin Johnson on the field right now? That's a complete false narrative. And Julio Jones, okay, has been arguably the best player in the history of the franchise. So that trade got you a first ballot Hall of Famer that you could make a strong case is the best football player the franchise has ever had. For an organization that hasn't done a whole lot of things right when it comes to finding personnel, they hit a home run with that guy. and they got it wrong? Now, look, we talked about this last night, did we not, Jarvis? That Jamal Anderson pick was as dreadful as you could have picked. But they weren't going to get up to number two. And if you look back, for all the people that said, oh, you got to give up first round next year and this, that, and the other. Okay, so if you'd had to give up two first round picks to get to number two, who's playing quarterback? Because it wouldn't have been Matt Ryan. You wouldn't have had the third pick in the draft to go get Matt Ryan. You might have ended up with a Glenn Dorsey or somebody like that when it was all said and done. Maybe not even. Might have even gotten a guy that good. Listen, I get revisionist history. I understand it. But truthfully, that's about as piss poor of a look back as you could possibly say is they should have gotten Calvin instead of Julio Jones. Of all the guys to try to figure out. All right, we get back from the top of the hour. It'll be time for the Falcons flyover. Your nightly look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the John Sharkey Show, live with you here on Sports Radio 910 The Game and on your radio.com app.